Okay, this is our 18th shir, Chai, in Sefer Musar Avicha. Today is the fourth of the month of Menachem Av. Hashem Yehabchenu L'Sosan L'Simcha. And it is the 23rd of... It's the 23rd? All right, I'll take your word for it. It's the 23rd of July. And we are on page Ayin Beis in the Sefer Musar Avicha. We have some very interesting and important things to learn today. So without further ado, on page Ayin Beis, last time we learned the concept, Rav Kook presented that nivel peh, foul speech, is not only in the categories when where people think it is, but it really applies to many other categories as well. He spoke about nivel peh, pardon me, but off-color speech, even in the area of arrogance. Any type of speech that stirs a person toward bad behavior in whatever area it might be, he says, is included in nivel peh. We tend to refer to it. The Gemara talks about it in certain areas, but he says it applies to other areas as well. And he had two possibilities. Why is that so? Is it that the sin is broader than you think? It's not only the sin itself, it's also speech in that category. Or is it that such talk necessarily leads a person to some degree of feeling or even of action in that area? Rav Kook actually preferred the latter, and he said that even where our sages are critical of the great Hillel and even of Devorah HaNeviah, that she said in her Shira, Ad Shekamti Devorah, until I arose, and then her prophecy was somewhat taken from her, and Hillel, who said something to sort of teased the B'nai B'Seira, the Nesiyim, so he lost his Chachma, he forgot something. One way to understand it is that even though those people were above actually being arrogant, they just said words that sounded arrogant. The other way to understand it is that, no, at some subtle level, which we may not be able to pick up because we don't have the fine instruments or the sensitivity, but at some subtle level, if a person speaks arrogantly, if I talk arrogantly, even if I think I'm immune to it, it makes me a little bit arrogant. We may not be attuned to it, but Rav Kook actually prefers that explanation. He says it's more likely that by talking arrogantly, it makes a person arrogant, and the same is true of other midos as well, which is a theme he's going to talk about. This whole section is about how extreme and how careful we have to be with midos, which you'll see as he continues. But on top of Ayin Beis, he was talking about, even though there are places where our sages seem to violate this, he said that that's for special people who really are above it and for very unique reasons. The instance of one of the Chachmei HaGemara carrying the Kala on his shoulders, and they asked, what's with this? And he said, well, if you'll be on this level, you can do it. But it's one of these don't try this at home type of a thing. And he means that as an example, the same thing in other midos. There can be rare instances where there's somebody who really is at such a level that they're largely immune to it, and they have a particular reason why they're talking that way, but he says he should understand that's the exception and not the rule. So third line on Ayin Beis, Uchayotzebo, that abbreviation is Uchayotzebo, and similarly, Matzinu Kama Dvarim Ka'ela Shehutru L'Kedoshim L'Tzarach Shah, that we find numerous things that were allowed for the holy ones, and he showed in a Gemara in the footnote that that's the term they use for people who are at this level. L'Tzarach Shah means for a temporary need, a special need of the time. And it should not be used but for someone who is fit for this and in a time that's fit for this, meaning it's a rare individual and a rare instance that allows for exceptions. Here's a perfect example. We just said there's such a thing as nivel peh of arrogance, the foul speech of arrogance. You shouldn't talk arrogantly even if you don't mean it, or even if you think you're not susceptible to becoming arrogant. Yet we find at the end of the Gemara Masechta Sot, to the very end of the Masechta, we had a Mishnah that said when Rabbeinu HaKadosh died, the redactor of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, when he died, humility died. So Rav Yosef, I think it is, says there, no, don't say anava, don't say that because there's still me. And then it said when someone else died, I forget whom right now, Yiraschet, real fear of sin died. And then one of the rabbis of the Gemara says, no, don't say that, don't read in the Mishnah Yiraschet, because I'm still here. So how you read it, it almost sounds humorous to us, but what Rav Kook says is they were actually teaching a halacha. Sheyesh kan tzarech mitzvah. There's a need of a mitzvah. Shelo lekvoa mishna mutas, to not establish a wrong mishnah, a wrong teaching. If people will say when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi died, true humility died, they'll think that true humility is only humility at this level. V'hochiach, and he was proving, he was demonstrating, shelo bo'a hakabolaba, the tradition, the mesorah, and this wasn't coming, al anava v'yireschet b'mala hayoser gavo. They're trying to tell you, no, my level is also, this is called humility. These are people whose midos are living demonstrations of what the Torah means to say, and he's trying to tell you, this is what fear of sin is. This is what humility is. He's not doing it in any kind of arrogant way. He's trying to teach you what the trait is. see, because they were from the Amoraim. It was a Mishnah from the Tanoim. Those are the rabbis of the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said, seemed to say, we have an end to the full acquisition of this trait. And the rabbis who were in the early generations of the Amoraim are saying, no, we still do have it. This is also called humility. There's a footnote here I don't understand. In footnote Chaf Beis, he suggested that there'd be words missing, but the way I see it, it reads perfectly the way it is. What they're trying to say is, don't say that humility has died, because what I demonstrate is also called humility. Less than that might not be called humility, but this is still humility. And he suggests in the footnote to put in words that would change the meaning, but I think it reads the way it is. Ukamokin, and similarly, Hadar Reb Shimon bar Yochai, Ra'isi b'nei Aliyah, etc., v'yachoni lifter. Reb Shimon bar Yochai in the Gemara, in Masechah Sukkah, makes a shocking statement. I've seen B'nai Aliyah, that means people who are of elevated character, and they are very few. If there are 1,000, I and my son are among them. If there's 2, I and my son are them. He also says there, I could exempt the world from the day I was created until now from any punishment. And if I had my son with me from the day the world was created until now, he made statements that sound very, very proud. Says Rav Kook, Sha'ela hadvarim gufei Torah heim. These words are essential parts of the Torah. Ki kama gufei Torah yeshnam binyani neshamas v'kishurei namalos sayin. Especially if you get into Kabbalah, so much of Torah is about people. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, talking about the Zohar HaKadosh, what he was is Torah to us. So if he makes a statement about his greatness, he's teaching an important element of Torah. And that shouldn't be surprising. When people are used to disciplines that are outside of man, and man practices them, okay, so I don't know, there's mathematics, and I'm a great mathematician. If I'm talking about what a great mathematician I am, I'm being proud. But the Torah is the guidebook of humanity. Right? It's been said many times that other religions are written by man to define God. The Torah is written by God to define man. The Torah is supposed to be what man is. So we may be very far from it. As we go further from Har Sinai, we're not confident at all to say that we are actually personifying fully what the Torah means. But really, at the ideal level, human beings are supposed to be walking manifestations of what the Torah is. The book is not it. It's man who's living the book. That is it. So when you read about Rav Shimon bar Yochai, when you read about these people, and they have to make a statement, no, I am Anova. To us, it sounds almost comical, but again, he's telling you this is what the Torah is talking about. If I have a book on the shelf, humility, and it's this fat, that doesn't do anything for us. We need people to have anava, to have humility, and these great chachamim exemplified it. And again, once you get into Kabbalah or Shem Barichot, they exemplify other things in many different ways. So him making a statement about himself is a Torah teaching. It's not an arrogant teaching. V'yedias ma'alosos of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, he ba'atzma halacha. Knowing the level of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, knowing what he was capable of, knowing what his character was, knowing the purity of it, that itself is halacha. V'yesh lo kama toldos v'anafa miyusadim b'Torah. And there are many outgrowths of that and branches of that that are fundamentals in Torah, which I'm sure Rav Kook could elaborate on a lot better than I can. But understanding Rav Shimon bar Yochai is understanding Torah. Ukidematzinu, and as we find, this is further evidence of the same idea. Shehera Hakadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe dor dor v'chachamav. The Medrash says that God showed Moshe all the future generations in their chachamim. So when we read a Medrash like that, we think, Oh, how nice, how nostalgic, how beautiful. Hashem is so emotional. You want to see the future? You want to see what Torah is going to look like? Isn't this beautiful? Look at that rabbi. Look at this great tzaddikus. Look at these people who are... Says real quick, that's not what it was. It wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu was curious. Okay, what's it going to look like in 200 years? I'm curious. I'd like to know. It's a nice movie to watch. He said, that's not it. That is Torah per se. It wasn't intellectual curiosity. It wasn't making Moshe Rabbeinu feel good that his legacy would carry on. People who, just like there's a finite number of words in the Torah, there's a finite number of people who will be practitioners of Torah, they all are part of the Torah. So when Hashem showed Moshe the different chachamim of different generations who are going to bring out different ideas of Torah and teach it and emphasize it, that's part of Torah. Im kein machlal ha-Torah hi yediyas Torah, that part of Torah is knowing this. It's a beautiful way, by the way, of understanding that medrash. It's not just a vision, it's part of Torah teaching. Why does he mention all this? This is to show you that therefore when certain Chachamim made statement about what they were, they weren't doing that in any kind of arrogant way, and they were doing it for a great necessity. Nowadays it would be better for us not to say what we are, but those people had to say what they were. Ure'e and see shezeh ha'onaf ha'toli b'yediyas inyan mitziyusu hu onaf ikari she'ein roi l'mnov b'nei ha'olam ha'satov sh'yediyasu. This branch is so important to the Torah. It's not fit, it's not proper to withhold that from the world, this knowledge. To make them complete in this portion of Torah. So he wants to be humble, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. He doesn't want to tell people something, but then they don't understand something about the Torah. So therefore he has to say it. So that's the way to understand certain statements in the Gemara that sound proud or even arrogant. Ulef amim, and sometimes hutel l'chosid godol shabeach atzmo. Here's a different example. A different reason. Sometimes it's permissible for a great chassid, a great righteous person, to praise himself, kidei sheyiskanu b'ma'alasa, in order that they will be jealous of his level. Part of the idea why we do mitzvahs together is there's supposed to be a competitive feeling. Okay, you put a bunch of guys in a base medrash, and this one's excelling here, and this one's staying up late learning. One feeds off the other. The kinah sofrim tarva chachma. That's a famous phrase in the Gemara Bava Basra. The jealousy of scribes, scribes means chachamim, increases chachma. That's a famous, famous rule. It actually has halachic application. That we actually promote competition in Torah because it makes for excellence. Kinah sofrim tarva chachma. It has actually, in certain areas where Chazal tried to limit competition or protect from competition in a chachma, they promote it because it increases chachma. It has, you have to know how it's applied, but that's a rule. So by the same token, some chachamim would talk about their great level because it made others jealous. Oh my, wow, he can really do that. He's really up to that. I haven't achieved that yet. I got to work at myself. I thought I was ahead of where I am. Ukefi sharoa hatoela seyotzes me then per how he sees there'll be benefit that will come from that. Which is impossible otherwise. If there would be another way to do it, it'd be better not to make a statement that borders on haughtiness. But if a particular chassid, a particular chacham feels that this will encourage people and actuate people to do good in a way that other things won't, so then they do it. And so he actually was in the middle of a sentence. And per the degree of the benefit that will come to it from it, kein yigdal heter b'achavasa, so is the broadness of the heter. In other words, if it'll have a limited benefit, so he'll make a limited statement or a rare statement of how great he is. If it have a broader benefit, he might do it in a broader way. So there are chachamim who went from being very clandestine to being very public because they felt it would affect the world. Others felt it wasn't necessary and they remained more hidden. But how permissible it is, how big is the permission to broadcast his greatness will depend on what the benefit is that he feels will come from it. And from this category are the words of Abaye, and you can see in the footnotes of Gemara and Kedushin, Hareini ki ben azay b'shukei Tiveria. Behold, I'm like ben azay in the marketplaces of Tiveria. What that is as Rashi explains, that there was a day when Abaye, who's one of the rabbis of the Gemara, felt that he had tremendous lucidity in Torah, and things were open to him. Chachma was open to him in ways that it hadn't been before. And he declared, I'm like Ben-Azai. Ben-Azai is an early Tana, and he's an Amora. He's much later, not of the same level. Ben-Azai used to teach Torah in the marketplaces of Tiveria in Eretz Yisrael. Abaye was in Bavel, and he says, I'm like Ben-Azai. Well, what's he saying that for? He's saying it because it makes, wow, look at that. Look what a person can rise to. Rav Kook says, that's how you have to understand that statement. He wasn't just making a statement of his greatness, it was to encourage others. And there are numerous statements like that in the Gemara, and historically there are times when people who generally were very humble and hidden on occasion, I gave an example last week, but on occasion made statements that were very much the other way, but for a reason. But the point of it all is that that's the exception and not the rule, and really we should be very careful with it. Top of Ayin Gimel. Omnam. However is going on that you should be humble, not that occasionally you could be arrogant. Because the main gist of what we've been saying is what we did last week, which is you have to be very, very careful, and a slightly haughty statement that's not called for can do damage to a person's character. That's what Rav Kook is saying. Omnam, however, shmiras haro'i lefi erko be'emes. Guarding what is fit per his true level. Let me paraphrase what he's going to say and then I'll read it inside. There's a difference between pursuit of honor and what we would call in English basic dignity. There's an honor that you have, that we have, that we should protect. What the Gemara calls kavod habrios, the basic dignity of people. And that a person should protect his own. To humble myself so much that I don't act with the dignity or don't maintain the dignity that I should have based on the level that I'm at, that's also not right. Seeking higher levels of honor, they should give me accolades and honors as if I'm something higher than I am, that's no good. We should avoid like the plague, or if Cook was just saying. But guarding one's own proper sense of dignity, that should be done. So that's what he's going to say here. I mean, you'll see in a second, human dignity is something that Halacha takes extremely, extremely seriously. When somebody would have to do something that's unbecoming or embarrassing, the Halachas, you bend regular Halachas into a pretzel, and at times you even override them to maintain human dignity. I'm just thinking now, somebody in the community gave me a video of his grandmother's a Holocaust survivor. Very nice. It's Yolanda Beltush's grandmother. She did a very nice a video of different talks she gave, and she told a story, that a very painful story, appropriate for the 9 days, that they were somewhere in Germany and they were being kept, and it wasn't really an SS guard, but some kind of guard that didn't let them go to the bathroom at night. There was a latrina, and they weren't allowed to go to the bathroom at night, and one of the girls that had went anyway, and basically lost her life for it. Terrible. But it shows the human dignity person, that's something that Halacha takes extremely, extremely seriously, and because that's the way human beings are. Our basic dignity has to be protected. Now, we're not talking about to that extreme, but kavod habrios, a person's essential honor, basic honor, that should be protected. So that's what he says here. Omnam shmiras haroi lefi erka be'emes, guarding what is fit to him per his true level, kishahu below hata, when it is without. Hata is the ability to mislead oneself. And in the footnote, he refers you to the Mesil Sisharim in the section on Nikias, where he says that a person, it's very hard to have the midah of Nikias. Nikias is purity, pure cleanliness, because we easily mislead ourselves. Very easy to convince myself I deserve X, I deserve Y. But when it's kishahu below hata, when it's without any self-deception, we would say in English, then it appears then there's no arrogance in that at all. That's not haughty at all. Va'adaraba, to the contrary, mitzvah nami ika. There's also a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to maintain your basic dignity. Va'are das haposkim. Das poskim, the opinion, the ruling of the halachic decisors is she'asur levater al kvod habrios. It is forbidden to forgo, to trample and on the dignity of people, afilu b'makom mitzvah, even in the instance of a mitzvah. Those can talk about if a person's wearing a talis, and remember, the talis was the garment he was wearing. It wasn't an added garment. That was his cloak, and it's Shabbos, and he realizes that the tzitzis are not tied properly. He doesn't have proper tzitzis, so on a weekday, so tie the tzitzis now, but on Shabbos, you can't. So he doesn't take it off where he is, even though now he's wearing a four-cornered garment without tzitzis, so really the halacha is take it off. What are you doing? You can't wear that without tzitzis on it. No, he should continue walking with it until he gets to his home, until he gets to a private place, he can take it off there. But even though he's in violation of a mitzvah, but it's not human dignity. We're not talking about he would walk around unclad entirely, but he would walk around, if he took it off, he's walking around, it's like walking around in an undershirt, It would be inappropriate. It's not human dignity. It overrides the mitzvah. V'day lanu lomod mimash hetira hatorah levatal. That abbreviation is b'sheva al ta'aseh. It's sufficient for us to derive this concept from what the Torah permitted to nullify passively. Sheva al ta'aseh means to passively. Mishum kvod habrios mitzvah da'oraisa. One can passively violate a positive mitzvah because of kavod habrios, because of human dignity. It overrides a mitzvah. God's commandment is overridden because of human dignity. And the Chacham talk about the permission to even nullify it, not only passively, but actively. We talk about two instances of kavod habrios. Torah says that even though you're supposed to return a lost object, but if the lost object is something that it wouldn't be becoming for this person to be schlepping around, he's the chief rabbi, he's some great sage, and it's a sheep or something. So zokein ve'en lufichod, it wouldn't be per his honor to be walking with that, so he needn't do the mitzvah of returning the lost object. What do you mean? It's a mitzvah, it's a personal mitzvah, so it's only to Hashem, it's to the person too. No, it would not be proper, it would be unbecoming for him. And that's at least passively, so he's just refraining from it. But the Gemara also says if there's a meis mitzvah, God forbid, somebody died and there's nobody to tend to his dignity, to inter him, to take care of the burial preparation, so then even a Kohen, who's not allowed to defile himself, is not allowed to become Tomei, should and must take care of that nifter. He's overriding the Torah's, he has a mitzvah not to be Tomei, but the dignity of this human being has to be interred, overrides it. And there it's bekum va'aseh. There he's actively doing something. Okay, so that shows you to what degree the halacha takes kavod habrios. The kavod habrios nerach b'chol echad l'fi ma'alasu matzava. So that was all to demonstrate how important it is in halacha. But now getting back to our discussion, so the basic dignity of a person, it is evaluated by each person per his level and his, we would say, his station, his circumstance. Bizman sheyiyu midosav miyushavos. When his midos are in a state of equilibrium, karoi, as is proper, v'yochol lodon al atzam ubli ta'os, and he can judge himself without error. The problem is, we get carried away. Not always capable of doing this. But if he can make a proper assessment of himself and his station and his circumstance, then he can properly assess what's just kavod habrios, what's proper dignity, which should be maintained, and what is the pursuit of honor, which should be, as I said before, avoided like the plague. Ve'al zeh nemar, and about this it says in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, al tachmod kavod yoser melimudcha. You shall not covet honor more than your limud. Before I go on, I just want to mention that there are two different versions of that Mishnah. One is that the phrase yosem elimudcha is connected to the next words, two different phrases. Al tachmod kavod, don't covet honor, kama, yosem elimudcha asay, do more than you're learning. According to that version, this is irrelevant. But there's another version that doesn't have the word asay and has this all as one phrase. He's working with that version. Many Mishnayos we have in different versions, in different girsos. He's working with the version that has it all as one phrase, which therefore reads, al tachmod kavod yosem elimudcha. Don't covet honor more than your limud. And limud, the way he's going to translate it here, we translate limud as learning. But limud really means regular habituation, what's normal for you. Limud means learning because you go over something time and again. It means training, what you're trained or accustomed to. Mitzvahs anoshim elumada, the Navi gives us Musar. Don't do mitzvahs like mitzvahs anoshim elumada, which means people are just habituated. They're just conditioned to do that. I get up in the morning, I do my davening. That's why we're not supposed to do mitzvahs. So limud really doesn't mean in-depth study. It means training. That's why you'll sometimes find it to mean habit. So here, it means don't seek honor more than what's your training, meaning more than what's your real circumstance in life. Shekavanasa, what it means is hergelcha, what you're accustomed to, which means what's fit for you. Ki hakavod hamurgul hu kvod habrios. The customary honor that one would expect of one's station in life, that is kavod habrios. People want to, I just want to be treated like a human being. I want to be treated with the normal dignity that you treat anyone else. That's what we should protect. That's kavod habrios. Elisha yishmar, that's what he should guard himself. Shiloh, that's a funny usage, but he has it without the hay, but probably yiftel levava, that his heart shouldn't seduce him, la'alos b'malos gedolos, to raise him up to higher levels, k'dei she'yia lo yoser kavod mitzad matzavo. What he's saying is like this: a person should want the honor that is expected for his station in life, but he should be careful not to bring himself to a station in life that's higher than what he really should be, in order that he'll get the requisite honor. Okay, so now the working definition is you should expect the honor that's coming to your station in life. But he's just one caveat. But don't try to bring. I shouldn't bring myself to a higher station than I really deserve, and then say, "Well, now this is just covet of brios. This is just a regular dignity, because really I shouldn't be at that station." Alternatively, he should also be wary that at the station he's in, he shouldn't seek more honor than one would expect. Rav Kook is now going to talk about two problems. He's going to say each one has something worse than the other. One is where a person should be here. This is what he's really fit to be in life, but he pushes himself to be here, and then he expects all of the ensuing honor, which is really not right. And he says, what's the problem? I'm in this station. I mean, he really shouldn't be there, and therefore the covet that's coming to him is not proper. Alternatively, he doesn't seek a higher position than he deserves or than he's fit for, but the position he's in, he wants covet heaped, you know, double, triple scoop with a cherry on top. He wants a higher measure of covet. He's going to talk about how either one is problematic.
When a person pushes himself to be here, what does that mean? Because to me, it seems like you're pushing yourself for growth. If you're pushing yourself for growth because you want to do it l'shem shemayim, that's okay. But if you're pushing yourself for growth,
well, he's going to say that. He's going to point out there are positives in each one that aren't in the other, and also negatives. The positive in seeking a higher station is that it might actually work to try to get there. The negative is that if I'm not really fit to be there, it's not proper. I just want to clarify a lot of the svarim we've been learning. The Chazon Ish's Sefer, and I kept reiterating this. The audience that the author might be talking to is not necessarily us. It has application for us. Very often, I think these Chacham are talking to what we would call great Chachamim. I think this is a greater challenge for people who, you know, he could be talking to this chief rabbi and this chief rabbi. He's talking, we might not be thinking of stations in life. I don't know, positions, I don't know. I was just trying to get through my life. But as Rabbi Yisrael Salant and all the Bali Musa talk about, the higher one climbs, or the higher one's position is, the bigger the Yetzirahs are. A person who's not in a realm where kavod is such a big emphasis, then it's not such a Yetzirah. But the more a person is in realms where there's this position and there's this authority and that, so then they become Yetzirah. Well, I'm fit for that. He's not. That's where the Yetzirah starts. So he's giving these exhortations. I think the things we can learn from, but we may be blessed that these don't come up as much in our day-to-day lives as they may come up in others or in other times in history. So you have to realize that sometimes we hear he's emphasizing something that we don't find so applicable. It might in fact not be. I'm sorry.
Why are they necessarily related? In that if somebody's pushing themselves to a higher level, why are they expecting to get back anything versus just pushing themselves to
No, that's level? Fine.
So if they're divorced, the two things are like...
Yeah,
you
sure.
If you're looking to make yourself a better person, then it's not necessarily you're thinking, oh, if I'm a better person, then people will have to come at me. I want to be a better person, so I'm working harder, and the other stuff's kind of...
But sometimes we do say, mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma. When we teach children, we give them honor. You learn that, you're going to... Everybody's going to clap at the end. We do teach people. We don't want them to do it in a very negative way, but even we ourselves, part of the way we get ourselves to do things is with some level of lo lishma. In fact, the Rishonim talk about it. That Gemara that says that a person should do Torah and mitzvahs, even shelo lishma, he says maybe he's learning hikari rav, so people should call him rav. Not a terrible thing. Eventually he has to work on correcting it. Rav Chaim Volozhiner used to say, when you do things shelo lishma, the shelo lishma has to be lishma, though. There has to be an end goal of hoping to do it for the right reason. When I'm giving candies to kids who learn something, but I want them to understand, but this is a temporary incentive because I want you to taste the sweetness of Torah, and eventually you don't need the candy. And adults have their own candies, and the goal is, so we set goals, we give little incentives, but we know ultimately the goal is to not need those things. Rav Kook is just warning us that the Yetzirah of kavod and of arrogance are dangerous ones. So you're 100% right. If a person can set higher goals and step away from the covet aspect, of course that's fine. But the warning is that he won't. So he says, "Ve'elahema shnei chalokim mushchasim." These are two different lots that are, but mushchas means corrupted. They're both corrupted. Sheyesh b'kol echad tzad chomer, that each one has an element of greater severity. This is very common in Gemara terminology when you talk about there's two things. This one has something worse about it, and this one has something else worse about it. And those, in some ways, this is better, and in some ways, it's worse. In some ways, this is better, in some ways, this is worse. So he explains how, and this has to do with what Eve just said. Ki hamis'ave v'chomed kavod, because one who desires and yearns for kavod, kishehu b'matzava, when he's in his station in life, yoser mikafi matzava, more than his station. In other words, he's not looking to be a higher position, but he wants the honor that he gets in his position to be more. Afal pi she'eno sam libo lios b'matzav yosegar, he's not applying himself to become greater. He just wants greater honor. Hudaver maguna ma'od, so that's very unbecoming, very deplorable. Ve'ein shum shlemus nimsheches lo kama, and no shlemus, something, no pursuit of development will be drawn from it, practically. Sharei kevin shirotze b'kavod yosem haroi l'matzav. And Eve, this is really your point. If I want to get, I want to get more honor in life, but how do I want to do it? Because I want to become greater, and then people will give me greater honor. But so at least the honor pursuit is not good, but at least the fact that I want to become greater, that can be a good thing. Here we're talking about something. No, I don't want to be greater. I just want people to clap for me louder. So what good's going to come from that? Ushleimuso harei lo yosef shleimus ba'atzmo. He's not going to add anything good to himself. Sheyasigeo bozeh hakavod. He doesn't need any greater completion of himself in order to get the covet he wants. He just wants to be at the same station with more covet. So it doesn't bring with it anything good. Sharei yeshlo ba'asagoso hakavod hamagil shleimus kazu. Basically, it doesn't draw him to do anything better, and just his whole life he's going to be angered and pained that, why don't people give me the real honor I deserve? So that doesn't do anything good. Rav Kook borrows a phrase from the Gemara. The Gemara says, Haiman the Yohir, this one who is arrogant, even on the people of his house, he's not acceptable. I mean, nobody can stand him. He walks around his whole life, wish people really knew how great I was. He can't, he's unbearable. Aval ein hamida kazos yechola lifrutz kolkach gidros olam. But now the good side. On the other hand, this mida, it's a terrible mida, but this mida is not going to corrupt like boundaries in the world. In short, what he's going to say is, but at least you're not going to have somebody who ends up in a position that he doesn't deserve, or pushes himself up to have authority into making decisions for Klal Yisrael or for any group of people when he's not fit for the job. It may be true that he's pursuing honor and not doing anything to deserve more honor. So in terms of his own midos, it's very bad. But in terms of the effect it has on the Klal, it's not so terrible, because at least he's not trying to escape to some higher, he's not trying to get promoted to some higher position where he's going to be doing things that he shouldn't be doing, where he's going to be having authority that he shouldn't have. Kevin she'im kol zeh nafsho tova lav matzavo kamo shehu, turn the page, because at least he's at ease, he's happy with things the way, with his position the way it is. He just wants more honor in his position, but he's not trying to get a position of higher authority. Aval ha'ish she'tamid eino mistapik v'matzav shehu, but the person who never accepts the position he's in, Verodev dafka lamala yosegdol, and he runs after dafka, a higher level. Mipnei she'ein hakavod shemagiyalov matzavu kedailo, because the kavod he has in his position is not fit for him in his mind. In other words, this person doesn't just say, well, I want to stay in my position, but I want more honor. I know how I'm going to get more honor. I have to be the chief, and I have to be, he wants to constantly climb higher, and he's trying to climb, the problem is he's trying to climb higher than he's fit to be. So on the one hand, k'tzas tova yesh bazeh. On the one hand, there's some good. Shal kol panim taviu lehishtadel k'tzas basagas hashlemus. It will bring him. Well, how are they going to make me that if I don't increase my knowledge, my skill? So on the one hand, it does actuate him to do something good. Aval hashlemus hazos tia nishchasas imroa tchunasa. But this, whatever shlemus he does achieve, will be ruined because of his bad characteristic, and opposite the good that he'll get, tigdal ha'arisa b'zeh, the destruction will increase. Sha'arei l'misha ma'achiv nafsho, somebody who, ma'achiv nefesh, and it's based on a pasuk in Mishlei, and Mishnah in Perkei, is a person who, a broad soul, meaning he's got a huge appetite. But we're not talking about the physical appetite, we're talking about I got to conquer the world, and not in a way of humbly trying to do what he can, but it's because of he wants to aggrandize himself. Lalos, to go up. Ein mala gvoa malasa. There's no level that's higher than he is in his mind. In other words, nothing is too high. What do you mean? I'm this, I'm that. It's one thing to have yearnings. It's another thing to have delusions. So he thinks whatever he sees. I could be one. If he's that, I'm also that. Ein l'davar keitz, there's no end. V'tachlis, there's no limit. Olam lo yimolim ma'avayo. His yearnings will never be fulfilled. V'ein keitz l'chol hadrochem shi'achem. And there's no limit to the different paths that he will make. Al yedei chachmas yitzra, by the chachma of his yitzra. Not true chachma, not true wisdom, but his yitzra hara will devise ways. When a person desperately wants something, he devises all kinds of ways. Lahasig mevukasha, to achieve his goal. The kamatuchal is gaber midara azos al nasho, and how this negative trait can burgeon, can become strong within him. Lahashchisa, to destroy his soul. Lahavodon olam, to eternal loss and destruction. Barachakosa me'ar ha'emes, when it, as it distances him from the light of truth. He's so far from the truth, all he sees, and this has a lot to do with the previous sections we learned. Instead of seeing himself for what he really is and the great honor to be able to serve Hashem when I am nothing, it's the opposite. He thinks everything has to be added to himself, and that's all which Cook spoke at great length about in the section we did last time. That inner yearning for greatness is good, but instead of understanding it in the right way, which is the greatness of Hashem, he thinks the only greatness is greatness of myself, which Cook likened to drunkenness, where a person needs that fix. Instead of seeing the greatness of life for what it is, he only feels stimulation if he has this artificial high feeling, which is all based, it's all nothing, it's all untrue. Ulafika, and that leads a person to destruction, as he said, just like a drunk. His whole life is in a state of euphoria, but it's all based on nothing. As soon as the alcohol dries up, he's not there, he's rolling around in the gutter. Ulafikach nira shemetchila yargala adam atzma. Therefore, it appears that the right way to do it is that at first a person, and again, I think he's talking to people who would have these yetzaharas. Cook is a great man. He's telling them we're great people. He's talking to people who will have position, who will have positions of prominence. And when you have prominence, so then kavod becomes a yetzahara. If we're not put in that position, so we're spared that challenge. But shemetchila yargal adam atzma shalolus avos klal lamalas matzav yosef godom mashubo. The first thing is not to seek any level higher than what he's in. Start off with that. And then look at him. What's the kavod that's fit for me per my circumstance? I'm just here. I'm not trying to be anything else. But what's the dignity? What's the kavod that should be expected at that level? What is appropriate and therefore necessary? And what's excessive? You have to realize that a person can't totally negate his honor, especially if he has a position. I mean, one of the important things that we study in this season is Anvesanuso Shel Zachariah ben Avkulus Hichrivus Batenu. The humility of Zachariah ben Avkulus caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's one of the stories that we study on Tisha B'Av, but a person who's in a position to make a ruling and he says, no, who am I? Or if the Melech Yisrael, there are instances in Navi where the king of Israel was too humble and didn't stand for his position, that can be a terrible sin. Shmuel Hanavi says to Shaul, if you're small in your eyes, but you're the head of Israel and you can't act a certain way. Sometimes a person has a position, he has to think about what's proper and what's going too far, what's being too humble. Not too humble for himself personally, but too humble for position, for the people he represents, and so on. So the book says it has to be done very, very carefully, because the Yetzirah to blow myself up is much bigger than the Yetzirah to be overly humble, but the latter is also to be taken into account. The way of removing these two tendencies, one is to want more honor than my position, and the other is to want a position that's higher than me. He said the way to remove and to avoid the two of them, it appears that the antidote, the medical, the remedy to them is not the same, because their characteristics are not the same. This is something that needs a lot of contemplation. I think he's saying that the pursuit of wanting honor more than what my position deserves is one problem, has to be addressed one way. wanting to be given a position that's higher than what I'm deserving is a different kind of yetzihara. And he says, this one has to be addressed one way, this one another way. If you find it's relevant, please meditate on this teaching more. Okay? Let's move on to the next section, which generally is related because it has to do with the wariness we have to exercise in midos. Hey, iser michshol lifnei iver b'midos, the prohibition of misleading somebody in midos. Right? We have a pasuk in the Torah, lifnei iver l'sitein michshol, in front of a blind man you shall not put a stumbling block, which our sages say really means two things. It means not to give somebody bad advice, and it means not to cause somebody to sin. Those are actually two different categories that both fall under that mitzvah. You shouldn't give somebody bad advice. That's a prohibition in the Torah, and you're not allowed to cause sin. Says Rav Kook, La'anias daiti nirash yesh iser michshol lifnei iver gam b'midos. In my humble opinion, it seems that there is a prohibition of, again, causing what we call lifnei iver, causing someone to sin, even in midos, not only in action. Right, the Gemara talks about this nazir, somebody took a vow he wouldn't drink wine, and he's on an island, and you're across the water, he can't swim to you, and he says, hey, could you throw me that bottle of Merlot? And I throw it to him, that's lifnei iver l'sitein michshol. He's not allowed to drink it, and I throw it to him. Gemara talks about selling things that will be used for pagan rites. You're not allowed to do that, it's lifnei iver. Whenever you facilitate a sin, says Rav Kook, it's not only sin in action, it's sin in midos as well. Afalpi, even though, Sheshamati mishmei de gaver rabba, that I heard in the name of a great man, she'ein b'midos mishem lifnei iver, that a great man said that there isn't such a thing. There isn't a problem of lifnei iver and midos. Lo eida ta'amo shel davar, I don't know his reason. Now I want to show you something amazing. In the footnote here, footnote Lamed Gimel, it says from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Charlap, who's one of the great, great Gaonim, passed away 60 years ago. In fact, I spoke about him in Shul on his yard site. He was a very, very close Talmud of Rav Kook. It's interesting, Rav Kook came over to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Charlap was born in Eretz Yisrael. They both wrote a lot about Eretz Yisrael, both very deep thinkers. So it said, Charlap is buried not far from Rav Kook's wife in the Beis HaKfaros in Sanhedria. And it's Hashem, when we do our mission to Israel, I'll take you to see it, please. We do need some funding on the volunteers. No, okay. But Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalav is a great person. Rav Kook's wife was nifter in the 50s when they couldn't get to Har HaZeisim. So he's buried in Har HaZeisim, but she's buried in Sanhedria. So it says in the footnote, I don't know if he's quoting his father. I think he's quoting his father. He says, my father said that he didn't find in any svarim that talk about the Isser lifnei iver and midos, except for the Pele Yoetz. Pele Yoetz is a classic Musar Sefer, and there it does say, I think I even copied it here, Pele Yoetz does say, Omer shivcho shel adam b'fanav b'ofen shiyocha lios garam lo shiyagas daito, a person who praises somebody in front of him in a way that it can cause him to become arrogance. He says, b'makom mitzvah, I don't know why those words are there. Averehi b'yado sh'over that's a sin. If it's really going to cause him to become haughty, it's a sin because it's lifnei iver l'sitein michshol. So Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap says he didn't find anybody. It isn't who Rav Kook is referring to. He said he heard in the name of a great man that there's no concept of lifnei iver and midos. All he found is that the Pele Yoetz says that there is. This here is Dini's grandfather's sefer, one of numerous, or Shach Nazon, he should live and be well, he's over 100. And I've quoted in my drushos in the past, in the back, it would be the sefer would be worth it just for these. He has Piskamim, aphorisms from the great Bali Musar, a whole bunch from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, from Rabbi Yisrael's Talmidim, from the altar of Kelm, and from the altar of Nevada, kind of Itzila Petterberg, and there, each one is like a whole, you could talk at great length about each one. These are Yiddish sayings, but some of them are not really so much sayings, they're teachings. On page Kufnun Vav, in Pirkei Tshuva Ugeula, of Rav Shalom Shachna Zon Shlida, in a section of Pisgamim from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, it says at the beginning here, Tiskamim mehagona chasid rabban ma'orin shal Yisrael harav adam l'malach Hashem Rabbi Yisrael Salanter Lipkin Zatzal. Zechat Zadok HaKadosh Baruch Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, real name was Lipkin. So, Os Kuf Zion on page Kuf Menvov. B'amesh enogel l'midos lo chayshinan alifne iver. What has to do with midos and things that have to do with midos, we're not concerned for lifne iver. V'ein lehimona, one shouldn't refrain from milachabed es chavero, from honoring his friend, shemo yabo yedei kach lidei gaivel, because of the concern lest he come to haughtiness. So it's a teaching of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter apparently said that what has to do with midos, we're not concerned about lifnei iver, and therefore don't refrain from honoring somebody because I'm thinking if I honor him that way, he's going to become haughty. Don't worry about it. So Salanter said we're not concerned with that. It's not explained here. I've had in my mind for a long time that I saw it somewhere else, and I've been searching high and low, and I don't know where else. But I think I've seen this teaching in the name of Rabbi Yisrael. I thought it was in the teachings of the Altar of Navarak. I looked around in the Sefer. I didn't find it. But I think it is spoken about elsewhere. If you happen to encounter it anywhere, please let me know. But I am certain that Rav Kook was referring to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He said, I heard in the name of a great man that we're not concerned about lifnei iver for midos. And Rav Kook is disagreeing. He says he doesn't understand it. He's referring to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. I have little doubt. And here I have a source. I don't have explanation of Yisrael's teaching, so I can't defend it or explain it. I'm reading from Rav Kook, and he says he doesn't understand it. So we have a machlokas here. Unless it could be they're ultimately saying the same thing. You'll see the way Rav Kook elaborates, but I can only read. We mean, of course, no disrespect to Rav Yisrael Salanter, Gaon HaGaonim, but I'm going to read what Rav Kook says. So he says, Lo Eda Tamo Sheldavar, I don't know what the reason would be. Shaharei gam be'etza she'ina hogenes yesh iser michshal lifnei iver. Even in giving bad advice, there is the prohibition of lifnei iver. I believe what he means by that is, if lifnei iver lifnei michshal, the prohibition before a blind man, you shall not put a stumbling block, just meant don't cause sin, if it only had that category, then maybe you would say, all right, but what about if I'm not really causing sin per se? It's a question of midos, it's a question of how he'll feel about himself. It's more subtle. It's not going to cause him to actively do an aveira. So maybe you could argue it doesn't go that far. He says, but lifnei iver includes giving somebody bad advice. Anytime you give somebody bad advice, that's also in the rubric of lifnei iver, and that doesn't mean causing a sin. So you could give a whole shiur as to whether that is a proof or is not a proof. It depends how you understand the two categories. But he's saying if it goes that far, that even giving bad advice. What do you think I should do today? This person said like this. I feel like you should answer like that. Anything you do, if it's bad advice and you know it, that's lifnei iver. So if bad advice can be lifnei iver, causing somebody to have a bad mida, even though there's no action, can also be lifnei iver. Ella, but shebamidos einu muchra kol kach. But in midos, to be machria means to decisively rule. If you have a scale, a balanced scale like this, and you want to say, the two sides are like this, I'll put another rock on this side, it'll be machria the kaf. It means to, between two options, in halacha we say that this one says like this, Mishnah Berurah says like this, Aruch HaShulchan says like that, can you be machria for me? It means to decide between two options, but it means to be decisive, to be clear. So he says, in midos, it's not so clear, it's not so decisive. I'll just summarize first what he's going to say, then I'll read it inside. Because the prohibition of lifnei iver is only when you know for sure it's going to cause something bad. But if you don't know for sure, I mean, why don't we take lifnei iver to the nth degree? Anybody who occasionally sins, you can't give them a dollar. If you go into their store and you give them a dollar, they might use that dollar to buy something that, I mean, there have to be limits to it. Otherwise, it would be incredibly constricting. So in lifnei iver has very defined parameters, well, at least in theory, that unless you're sure it's going to lead to something bad, it's not included in lifnei iver. If you could say, no, he won't necessarily use it this way, he'll use it that way, and the Gemara gets into cases of this, then it's not lifnei iver. So Rav Kook is going to say, applying that to midos, in theory, there would be lifnei iver even on midos too, but only if you know for sure it's going to cause him bad midos.
if it might not, if I'm saying something that could make you feel haughty, but it might not, then it wouldn't be lifnei iver. Maybe that's what Rabbi Shmuel Salanta meant also. When Rabbi Shmuel Salanta said, we're not concerned with lifnei iver, we give somebody honor, maybe he meant the reality is you don't know for sure it's going to cause him a midos problem, and your obligation to be honorable to someone else is stronger than your concern, well, maybe he won't take it the right way. Actually, somebody was collecting for his yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, came to visit our shul recently. He spoke between Mincha and Maariv, and he said this was the problem with the students of Rabbi Akiva. We learn in the Gemara, they did. Why were they punished? They didn't give honor one to another. So he said over, he heard from Rav Zadel Epstein, one of the great mashgiach, a great gedolim from the past generation, who said, you think that was just a wanton, they didn't have respect for each other? He said, no, it was a frum idea. I don't want to give honor to my friend because he may become arrogant by it. So they refrained from giving honor to other people with a religious rationale behind it, but the problem is it wasn't the right thing to do. Maybe that was even Rabbi Yisrael's source. In fact, after he spoke, I said, can you find me where that's spoken about? Because that would fit very well with this concept. It could be what Rabbi Yisrael is saying is, if I'm going to start making my religious, you know, I can't do this. If I give you a good meal, maybe you'll become very materialistic. So I come to my house, we'll eat dry bread, and this is an idea that Yisrael Salant does talk about numerous places. That when it comes to myself, you can be austere and harsh and questionable. But when it comes to somebody else, you're not supposed to be a bal musar on someone else's cheshbon. Invite the guy in, and you know, and all we have today is, you know, lukewarm, bad tea, and I would give you something nicer, but I'm afraid it's not good for your midos. You may become too material. That's not the way you're supposed to be. So apparently he said the same thing with honor. My job is to give you honor. What you do with it is your problem. So what Rav Kook is saying, that in theory, though, if I know for sure if that person is highly, highly susceptible to self-delusion, and I'm going to give him a standing ovation, it's going to, oh boy, it's going to set him back in his midos 10 years. Rav Kook is saying, in theory, then it should be prohibited. Maybe Rabbi Yisrael agrees, and he's just saying it's not likely to be that way, or maybe they're arguing. I'm not sure. Yeah, sure.
I was going to ask, what if the concern was that it might lead to a tendency in that direction, and then you could be looking down at ripple effect after that.
So I think Rav Kook would agree that then it's
honor who set that whole thing in motion way before it ever came near the activity.
Well, let's read the next few lines and see what he would say. I believe Rav Kook would then agree that you don't have to be concerned for. Lifnei iver is when you know.
When you know for sure.
He's gonna. In fact, he's gonna demonstrate it now halachically. You know, some things we learn, it's a point we already know, and we're just zeroing in on it and embellishing it and driving the message home. Sometimes there's a halachic question. Is there a problem with neighbor and me? There's not. Here he's trying to prove something, which another great man, I'm telling you, through Yisrael Salanta, holds otherwise or seems to have said otherwise, so he feels the need to prove the point. So here we're proving a point, really, in halacha. Sha'arim, the last four lines, in the five words on the page, in Dalit. Sharei din lifnei iver hu, the law, the din of lifnei iver is dehecha de'ikil lemitle behetera talinan. That's Aramaic, which means that where you can attribute it on heter, on something permissible, we do attribute it. In other words, where you can assume the good, we do assume the good. V'chazinan she'en hasafek bechlal azar lifnei iver. And we see that where it's a doubt, it's not included in the prohibition. There's a whole discussion halacha. When you know for sure something's prohibited, it's prohibited. What about if you're unsure? Right? Half of halacha is about what do you do when you're not sure. So sometimes halacha is safek l'chumra. Well, if you're not sure, right, we say a rule, safek d'araisa l'chumra. That piece of meat might be something that Torah prohibits. It might not be. I'm not sure, so I don't eat it. But there's some areas where, no, the only prohibition is what's known for sure. If it's not for sure, it's not prohibited. Lifnei iver is one of those categories. If you don't know for sure, it's not prohibited. V'afilu b'miyut tolin. Not only when it's an even 50-50 doubt, even if the likelihood of the good possibility is small and the likelihood of the bad possibility is relatively big, we still will be tolo, means to attribute, to hang on the small. Shahare ruba l'radio mikol makom yachol litlo shelokho l'shchit. That's an instance in the Gemara, if it's the Shemitah year, and somebody who will not observe Shemitah wants to buy my cow. The Gemara says the majority were used for plowing. A minority were used to be shechted to get the meat. I'm nevertheless allowed to sell him the cow and say, well, I hope he'll use it and slaughter it for meat, even though he might not. He might well not. He might use it to plow, and he's not allowed to plow. But the halacha is, it's not lifnever unless you know for sure. He comes in, he says, I'm looking for a plowing cow, then I can't do it. But if he doesn't say, and I have no way of knowing, even though the Gemara says the majority were used for plowing, I needn't assume that. All right, we'll have to pick up with this next time in Mitzvah Shomasi. We're out of time, and we'll continue next time.
Thank you. Okay.